You're watching Fanboy Versus with your hosts, JD Church, Nicole Hale, Chris Triplett, and Chris McFeely.
Hi, everybody. I am not JD Church, but I am hosting this week because he is... what is JD doing this week? I forgot already. Wow, I'm off to a great start.
I think he
start.
Just doesn't want to be here. I think that's
what it is. Well, who could blame him? Who could blame him?
He's throwing cow pies at passerby, you know? Sounds good.
They do down in Oklahoma. Yep. Way.
Let's just say he's bathing a small child, because that's what we said about Nicole.
Yeah, I heard that. That was funny.
Yeah, but it sounds so much more wrong when you say it that way. Yeah. Well, I'm Chris McFeely, and I'm here, of course, as always, with the handsome and talented Mr. Chris Triplett and the beautiful and vivacious Nicole Hill.
Vivacious, and, huh? Nice. Yeah, yeah.
And behind the scenes, we have the stunted and misshapen Brian Kilby. Whether or not he'll be chiming in on anything this week, I don't know if he'll be chiming in or not.
Probably not after saying that to
him. We love Brian. So coming up on the show this week, we're going to have reviews of Marvel Point One, Ultimate Spidey, Animal Man, and Fear Itself. But we're going to kick off with the news, as always. Not that there's been a lot this week. Well, let's see what happened this week. Well, Marvel's still canceling things.
Are they canceling now?
The news came out this week that they are canceling, they have canceled already. It didn't even get solicited. The Destroyers miniseries, which we may recall was going to be Fred Van Lente and Kyle Hotz's She-Hulk thing, A-Bomb, Devil Dinosaur, Beast team up.
I don't even remember that. What was that?
It was never solicited. It was only like announced that it was a project that was coming up. It was going to be Fred Van Lente and Kyle Hotz doing a Devil Dinosaur thing, She-Hulk, A-Bomb, Beast team up. And that was canceled. Two issues drawn, and then that's it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, Marvel really seemed to be cutting back on the fringe projects, because that's at least three things like that I was looking forward to reading. Just gone. It makes me feel like, you know, if these cuts had come like a week or two earlier than they did, like, we wouldn't have even seen Legion of Monsters.
Mm. And I like that one.
I know. Well, it's only four issues, and the second one's out this week, so you'd like to believe that they'll at least let the rest of it run, but they did cancel All Winter Squad after five of its eight issues were published, so you wouldn't even put it past them at this point. But as they cut back on the paper titles, they are broadening their digital horizons, because we found out this week as well that all the Ultimate comics are going to start coming shipped with download codes in them.
That's cool.
They did this. It is rather. They did it with Avenging Spider-Man this week. Did anybody read Avenging Spider-Man?
I didn't get it. They sold out of it. I was going to make that be the book that I read and talked about today, but they didn't have any.
I couldn't even look at it as a retailer, because they all came polybagged.
Oh, really?
So they all came with a download code as well. So, you know, it's the same as when you buy your DVD and you get your free digital copy, essentially, is what this is about.
Are the downloads, are they through Comixology, or is it through something else?
I don't actually know. Okay. They also announced that they're going to do the same. This is the weird, but this is slightly stranger to me. They're going to be doing this as well with their season one series of graphic novels next year. The season one stuff was announced a while back. That's going to be the... kind of Marvel's answer to DC's Earth One, even though DC only did one Earth One hardcover, but these origin, modern origin retellings of them, but not like DC, where it's like a completely different universe and it's like whatever, just like a new take on the origin. It's just like a classical retelling of various characters' origins, Spider-Man, X-Men, and
I remember the FF one. I saw a preview of it somewhere.
Yeah, I'll probably get that, because I'm a big FF whore, but I don't bother with the ones. But they're all going to come with a download code as well, so they're definitely broadening their digital horizons. They've also gone, I believe it was this week as well, so some kind of exclusive deal with the Nook as well.
Yeah, something where, like, Marvel stuff, some exclusive stories or novels, graphic novels or something. I don't know what it is.
I don't remember. Just trying to remember. I know that DC. DC is on the Kindle. Yeah, DC is exclusively through the Kindle, and Marvel's gone then exclusively through the Nook. And IDW is busy with the Kobo. So yeah. What else is in the news?
So do you think they're going to be promoting more digital than actual physical comics? Is that?
Ooh, I wouldn't say that they're it's not like they're promoting digital over physical, because you can buy the physical to get the digital copies on a lot of these things, you know? This is an inevitable, hideous, dark future where machines will rule the Earth, but we're not there yet. And they know.
Man, I can't wait till like the Terminator is like, you know, killing the human race with like a copy of Amazing Fantasy number 15 or something over its cover, over its face or something.
Yeah. Oh, it's like piracy gave rise to Skynet. Because why did I steal that comic? Skynet became Skynet just couldn't take it anymore and became self-aware in the face of piracy.
Oh my gosh!
Don't download, kids. let's see what else. Speaking
this
of terrible,
this service message is brought to you by McFeely.
Well, speaking of health and safety, another performer's been injured on Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark this week. It's been the first it's been the first time since they overhauled the production that somebody has been injured. There's a backstage injury, and it was a head injury, and it was the understudy. So the main actor, Reeve Carney, who plays Spider-Man, was in the audience and took up the role for the rest of the show, but he was taken to hospital for stitches. It's the first time since the show was overhauled, however many months ago, we haven't been hearing about it. It's funny that it comes less than a week, however, after the previous producer, Julie Taymor, who was let go from the show when it was overhauled. She's suing them over that.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. So, and then days later, injuries happen. You get the image of her in the rafters as some sort of phantom character dropping snapback.
I think they just need to, you know, I think there's a poltergeist in that theater. They need to get some ghost hunters in there. That's what they should do.
It's been quiet. It's been a quiet poltergeist. It's obviously a very litigious poltergeist. Stir up by legal action.
Did that thing ever actually premiere? I mean, did it have its official premiere yet? Or is it still?
It's been open and running now for a couple
months. No, I'm just thinking maybe the poltergeist is a DC fan.
Batman Live hasn't reported any crippling injuries that I'm aware of.
Oh god, I was watching a video of that, because I just heard about that Batman Live like a week or two back, and I watched the YouTube kind of promo of it. It's so creepy looking. I don't know what's going on with that. They end the video, all the actors are just kind of like standing perfectly still, kind of like in a comic pose, and I just thought, what in the hell are they doing?
I've not. Although my boss has seen it. I didn't see it, though. I'd like to see it. I'd like to see Spider-Man the Musical, too, but I already told you that was because of Swarm. Nothing else.
I wish they put them like on DVD or something, because that would be something really cool to...
Yeah, like the inevitable DVD. It seems almost inevitable, because they're really going to need to recoup the loss on that. Because it's got to run for years and years and years before it even makes back its money. So much money has gone into it. But, yeah, hopefully... money's going out on insurance as well for the poor bastards involved. Anything else in the news this week? Anybody hear about anything?
He said some kid changed his name to Captain Fantastic because he's he's a superhero fan.
I'm like, legally?
Yes. Over there in the UK. You guys allow that kind of stuff.
See, when you talked about that, I thought maybe he was like one of those vigilantes, one of them real world or something. He's like, I illegally changed my name because I no longer have a secret identity. I can protect my family
like
now.
The guy who changed his name to Optimus Prime, legally.
Mm-hmm. That's sad.
He changed it. He got to change his name to Captain Fantastic for 70 pounds.
Why?
How old is he?
19.
Oh, okay, so he's an adult then. He's not a kid then, really, is he?
Yeah.
Sure, you admit it's like...
Okay, I'm old. You're still 19. When you're still 19, you're still a kid to me, because I'm old.
Well, I know, but when you said kid, I get the mental image of a 10-year-old striding into the office, reaching his hand up and slapping the form down on the counter. You know? I want to be Captain Fantastic!
That would be awesome, though.
And that little boy grew up to be Captain Fantastic.
That little kid grew up to be beaten daily.
You wouldn't mess with Captain Fantastic.
He better be able to prove that name.
Yeah. Well, I guess the only other thing that happened this week, really, then, was that the Green Lantern animated series premiered on Friday night.
Yeah.
You all saw that. So what did we think about that, then?
It's pretty good. I enjoyed it.
Okay, I was a little iffy at first. There's a couple cheesy lines at the beginning. I'm like, oh, no. By the end, I was like, this is great. I love this. But I have to wait another whole 3 months now to watch it again.
Is it really? Oh, jeez. I think
the death is kind of neat, but I mean, because like Green Lanterns died, it was like, well, like two or three that died in that, didn't
it? Yeah, it was pretty. The thing is, like I said, at the end, I about nearly went into tears with just that one little line from the little girl. I'm like, oh my gosh, that's so sad. Yes, I about cried in a cartoon, so
nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
it definitely surprised me because I wasn't looking forward to it. Also, I'm not looking forward to that Batman CG TV show. It's coming in 2013. It looks awful. But
you don't.
It looks bad. I mean, Alfred.
It's a one still image.
I know, but it looks bad right now.
Brave and the Bold. Everybody thought it was gonna suck.
No, I didn't know if it was gonna suck or not.
Did you watch it on Cartoon Network?
Yeah.
Okay, because they were showing like all the different, they're like the DC Nation stuff that they're gonna be doing.
I saw that. Yeah, I saw the short. Like, there was like a short that they had accompanied with it. It was like a kind of clay stop motion.
Yeah, the claymation. It was almost like a walrus and Grommet. Is that?
Well, yeah, no, it actually is.
Yeah. Art. Yeah, it's yeah.
They're doing some Batman stuff. They're gonna do some Plastic Man stuff as well. And Lauren Faust of My Little Pony is gonna be doing Super Best Friends Forever with Batgirl, Supergirl, and Wonder Girl.
Yeah,
that's really cool. I'm glad they're doing stuff like that.
It looks
that.
Really
I think
funny.
That's interesting.
The thing is, the claymation Joker kind of reminded me of Krusty the Clown from The Simpsons.
Yeah, hair like him. Yeah.
Yeah, he, like that's Krusty. That's not the Joker. No, I think that they're going to be doing some good things in the future, and I really can't wait for actually this Green Lantern series to actually start up.
Certainly, yeah, it got off to a better start than I was expecting. I didn't know when I was going in if they were doing the origin again or not, so I was happy to see that they weren't for starting.
Yeah.
Especially when it started with Hal flying that plane, and I was like, oh, are we going in for an origin here? Oh, thank God.
And what did you guys think about, I mean, like, is it... Do you think like the whole series or for a long, but the first season is going to be basically, hey, we're in lost in space and there's no.
I figure it's got to be the first 13 at least. I mean, my brother and I were watching, you know, and Hal says, back we go, and he hits the button or whatever, and the computer goes, you know, unable to comply. Warp core is injured, you know, and I turn to my brother and I go, unable to comply. Series budget insufficient for large scenes of Green Lanterns on Oa. Because there's no way I think that is the big problem, like standing in the show, which is kind of unfortunate. It's kind of built into the show's just problem built into it with CGI, which is that you should have a billion jillion Green Lanterns, all sorts of different creatures, shapes, sizes, and models.
That's my problem.
CG, you're not going to be able to do that. So it's like, you know, yeah, there were the towering forces of all three of our Red Lanterns.
Well, the thing is, I every single character that came on screen, I really enjoyed. I think the one that I enjoyed the least was probably Carol, but we didn't really see a whole lot of her. But
no, she was there. She's gonna be a star, Sapphire, before you know where you
are. Yeah, but I liked how they were, you know, the Guardians. The Guardians? What are they doing?
Yeah,
the Guardians. Yeah. Like they were surprised that there's another core out there. So I'm like, okay, this is getting good. So
see, I'm kind of disappointed if they're not gonna come back because I really like Ganthet being the Guardians.
I do too.
Like,
he is so cool.
Go ahead, kid, just screw around and save the day. And you know, I didn't tell you.
I didn't see nothing.
I showed you where it was at. Yeah, I'm really gonna miss that because I liked that about the show.
I'd say they'll get. Eventually, maybe like if it's a 26 episode season, like maybe the first 13 will be set in far space or whatever. But I mean, because you know they set up Carol on Earth, they didn't make that CGI model for nothing, you know. They didn't hire on Jennifer Hale to do the one voice and nobody else, you know.
And I really like the ship. I thought that character.
Generally speaking, yeah, the sense of design is very solid. It is kind of like a Bruce Timm looking kind of show, but in three dimensions, you know? The Green Lantern physically looks like a Justice League Unlimited action figure. I don't mean that in a bad way, but I just mean like, you know, those figures look like, and he looks like that in three dimensions. It wasn't really a two-parter, though, was it? It was just sort of two episodes back to back.
Yeah. I liked it. I got an hour worth of entertainment.
Yeah.
I could see the difference because I was watching the first episode and I was looking at them and I was going, why don't they have an aura around them when they're flying? Because they didn't. And then they did in the second one. And I was like, oh, okay. There you go. Problem solved. Yeah, like, just noticed they just sort of floating along the first one, and then they had the nice aura around them. I mean, clearly something that's been designed off the back of a projected success of the Green Lantern movie, which did not happen. But obviously, it's taking the position that you'll be at least in some way with Hal's origin from the film, one would assume. So I'm hoping it manages to outstrip its predecessor in terms of... it deserves to, certainly, off the back of these.
I think even if you didn't watch the movie, you'll be able to catch on. I mean, I think the reason why we have this cartoon now is because it did have a movie beforehand.
Point.
So...
There's that bit, like, you know, you did sort of laugh at that bit where the Green Lanterns go, and the Guardians are like, oh, holographic displays. We split the universe into 300 sectors. There's a Green Lantern for every sector. Blah, blah, blah. And then Hal just leans over and goes, we know this. Yes, you do. They know you do. Why are you saying it? As you already know.
I really liked Hal Jordan. I liked his little quirky attitude. It was definitely Hal.
Slightly cockier Hal Jordan than we've seen. Film and Injustice League, as opposed to the cardboard guy from the comics, you know. I mean, I wasn't sure what to make of the fact they were using the Red Lanterns at first, because it's so very of the now as far as Green Lantern goes. It seems like a lot of what Green Lantern is doing in other media from the film to this are shaped around what Geoff Johns has done from Parallax in the film to and the basic description of the powers, like elemental energies and all the rest of it.
It's a weird villain to start off with. I mean, it's...
I like it.
It's just kind of weird. I liked it. You know, it worked out.
But who else... Green Lantern actually doesn't exactly have a great rogues gallery, does he? I mean, you got Sinestro, obviously, and Sinestro's the daddy, but what do you got after that? You know, evil...
So is it possible if it is successful, do you think, like, first season, it's the Red Lanterns, we deal with this threat, and then maybe Sinestro Corps?
I don't know. I mean, I would think they're probably consciously holding back on Sinestro. Maybe.
I honestly, the thing is, I think Sinestro's going to probably be next season. I think what this season's going to set up, this is just me, I think the story's going to be set up around Razor, the new Red Lantern. I honestly think that's going to be his story this season. Because you could tell he's a Red Lantern, but you know he's going to go green.
There'll be a change of allegiance there, definitely.
And then...
I also wonder if they consciously decided not to do Sinestro on the projected existence of a sequel to the film.
Yeah.
In the same way that MTV's Spider-Man couldn't use any real villains, for instance, as a random example.
And they didn't even have Sinestro on OA. I mean, we didn't even get
There was just nothing there. They just left. Be so that maybe it can come back later on, you know, after they've maybe nailed down what it is they want to do. And that's the thing about shooting them off into the far corners of the universe as well. It's not even an issue. They don't have to worry about it. From a storytelling point of view, like, although it's one that's obviously quite consciously influenced by budget, fair play. I mean, it's really quite a good storytelling mechanism. So you don't get bogged down in the greater cosmology of Green, I'm not here to specifically rag on the film or anything, but like the film did, you know, it's not it's a sort of setup that allows them to go out there and do new things and not get bogged down in the way the Green Lantern universe is, and they've already broken, you know, from that already with the way the Red Lanterns are flying around on their big city ship and talking coherently, also a big addition for the Red Lantern. Yeah, I'm pretty interested to see what happens. I mean, I wasn't going into it with... it's not that I have anything against Green Lantern, but I think I kind of have something against Green Lantern after the film.
Oh.
Or maybe it's not so much that I just have something against DC's misguided faith in Green Lantern. I don't know. It's not like I'm ragging on the comics or anything. Comics are good, but it's like, film, oh, we're totally going to make a sequel. Oh, there's going to be a roller coaster. Oh, here's a CGI cartoon.
Well, I guess it's all that Geoff Johns, the head of what was it called? His head of entertainment creator, or something, or whatever it is. That's what it is. He's like, hey, I like Green Lantern. Let's make a video game. Let's make a TV show. Let's make a movie.
oh, the movie tanked and none of this other stuff really by any rights should exist. Fuck it anyway. But no, I was pleasantly pleasantly surprised and quite impressed off the bat of the first one. So I'm looking forward to seeing what more.
I'm surprised, like at the very beginning of the show, I'm surprised they actually used the word kill. I don't know if you guys noticed that.
Yeah.
Kill him. And you're just like that. That was really.
It's not that uncommon anymore, but
I know. But
we
it
were
still sets me
when
back
when
a little
we were,
bit.
When we were old enough, when we were watching cartoons, but old enough to notice that sort of thing, the 90s is basically what I'm saying here. You know, that they really didn't, so it would always catch you if they said it, you know. It wasn't uncommon to hear it in the 80s, but we didn't really care back then. We were only little. But in the 90s, whenever they stopped saying it, then you noticed when they said it. And I still notice it now.
Yeah, so when you said at the beginning, it's like, whoa, this is... And you know what? And like you said, people actually died in this show, so...
Okay, right, just trying to get our bearings back after a catastrophic technical failure caused by the lack of J.D. Church and the twisted hand of Brian Kilby. And his internet service provider, more specifically.
Kilby was just jealous that he hasn't seen Green Lantern yet, so... He couldn't take it anymore.
So, okay, I was going to, just before we vanished there, I was gonna tell a tale of Twitter that happened to me on Saturday night there. This was
a weird
one.
Can we get, like, some music to go with this? Like, whenever you want to tell a tale of Twitter. It's some sort of, like, you know, music to go with it.
You can't unhear it. So... I was talking with a couple of guys about the voice acting in Green Lantern because we were just saying it's a good show. It's a good cast. It's weird to hear Josh Keaton playing an adult in something for change. He's playing Hal, and we were just commenting on like some of the foibles in modern voice acting recording. It's like Kevin Michael Richardson plays Kilowog, and I love me some Kevin Michael Richardson, but man, once the Cleveland show happened, that dude is in it. Everything.
I know. I was thinking of that. This guy has the best voice acting resume ever. The thing is, all of his characters look the same. Look at Roadblock and Bulkhead and Kilowog. They all have these big, huge chests.
The same too.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's not like he doesn't have range. It's just that he does play the big, scary black man.
Well, it's kind of like I just lost his name. The guy who played Kronk.
Kronk in...
In Emperor's New Groove. What's his name?
Patrick
Warburton. Yeah, he plays...
Patrick Warburton, do you have a role that requires a large, tough gentleman with fewer brain cells than his position and employment would imply that he possesses? Well, I'm your man, Patrick Warburton.
Oh, God. I want Venture Brothers to come back. I miss you, Venture Brothers. Come back.
Patrick Warburton, but
I got so freaking sick of hearing him play every big brawny character with less intelligence than his high ranking job would imply he's supposed to possess. But anyway, we were talking in comparison
Twitter.
To young Young Justice, and like how there's been some casting issues, shall we say, with that show, with Greg Weisman's tendency to cast the actors that are in all his projects, like Tom Adcox as Clarion the Witch Boy was weird, Ed Asner as Dr. Fate was weird, Brent Spiner as the Joker was not good, there's just things like that, and you know it turned around to talking about how you know that Bruce Timm DC shows tend to have like their own stable of actors that you'll hear as well. And I countered with saying that that's true, but they tend to be like actors you'll actually hear in cartoons. You know, I've never heard Tom Adcox do anything except Greg Weisman shows. You know, I've never heard him in anything. But I'm not going to be surprised if, and as a for instance, I said, Gray Delisle plays, I don't know, Bleez or something, Bleez being the female Red Lantern. And then I went and played Arkham City for 4 hours. just before I went to bed, I checked my messages. Grey Delisle played Catwoman in Arkham City. Grey Delisle's in everything. She was Black Canary in Brave and the Bold. She was Azula in Last Airbender. She's Mandy in The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy. She's Catwoman in Arkham City. She's in everything. Dr. Holliday in Generator Rex. She's in everything. But I just threw the name out at random because it's somebody you'd always hear in a cartoon, and I picked the character at random. And I come back and I check my messages, and I didn't know Grey Delisle was on Twitter, so I didn't at Grey Delisle her or anything, but Grey Delisle replied to me with an all caps message of 5 exclamation marks, "I'm Bleez!" And I was like, I legitimately didn't know what to make of that. And I said as much back to her, and she's actually playing Bleez in the fucking show.
Yeah, I'm looking at the IMDb right now, and I'm like, yep, they have her down now.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that was to say nothing of the fact that her husband also tweeted me back to say he'd just had sex with her, and it was fantastic.
That's nice.
Thanks.
Yeah, those tweets, funnily enough, were deleted this morning.
Oh, and I'm showing on IMDb, Kurtwood Smith is going to be in the series.
Kurtwood Smith was the guy who died in this one.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, he was the, I don't remember the character's name.
Oh, that's the thing, I didn't remember his name. It was Shiree Rev.
Was he the one with the family at the end?
Yeah, the one who died at the end.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay, that's why his voice sounds familiar. Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, that's this week's Tale of Twitter.
That's awesome. That is awesome.
That needs to be a new staple of the show, I think.
They've all been... All the posts from that weren't mine have been deleted from Twitter now, so I don't know, maybe I shouldn't be sharing those, but that was too weird not to share.
That was awesome. That's a cool story, though.
Yeah, and so I tweeted this morning, step one, mention Grey Delisle's name on Twitter. Step two, Grey Delisle's husband tweets you back to say they've just had sex. Step three, I don't know. Step four, stop it!
So, awesome.
Reviews for this week, then. I'm going to mix shit up this week because I'm in charge. I'm going to start with Nicole. Nicole, what do you got?
Oh, well, I started not too long ago.
Yeah, I know. Well,
okay.
It's the guy who always starts. It's you or it's me, and it's going to be me, so it's you.
All right.
But what a mix stuff up.
I'm going to talk about one of my favorite series to come out of the new DC 52. It's the third issue of Animal Man. Again, this is a very strange comic. What's basically happening is that Animal Man and his daughter are going into the Red, it's called the Red Place, where like all the other animal people are at. And he doesn't know what's going on, but his daughter, she knows exactly what's happening, but she won't say anything. All she's saying is just trust me. Well, why they're in this whole Red Place, his wife and his son are being attacked by these other creatures from the Green Place. So you got green versus red. Sound familiar? Just happened in the Green Lantern series. So so instead of, you know, it used to be blue and red, now it's blue and green, red and green. So so you have the two different stories. You have the story taking place in the Red Place and the story that's taken on at home. And these creatures, which are really disgusting, I'm talking just about organs flying out, they're mismatched. It's very graphic, let's just say that. It is rated teen plus because of the graphicness of it. So, but basically that's all I could say is there's these two battles and, you come to the end and you see an imposter, but you're not sure if he is one or not. You're not sure if this imposter defeated these creatures or if he has become one. So that's what's basically the story in a short, you know. Most likely it's a fighting issue, so you see a lot of fights going on. There's not a whole lot of story, but there's still yet a lot going on. So the series amazes me. It's very dramatic. It pulls at your heartstrings a little bit with you know, Animal Man being such a family guy. And I guess DC really hasn't done that much with any of the other characters, but they kept his character to that. So, yeah, I highly recommend it. Again, it's a little graphic, so if you can't really stand a little bit of bloodiness and gore, probably not for you. But if
I give that a leaf. There is some messed up imagery going on.
When you were talking about it before the show, it sounded just like Swamp Thing.
Yeah, that's what you're saying. I really pick up Swamp Thing, which I'm surprised I haven't. But
I'm the same with Animal Man. Like, I'm getting Swamp Thing, and I'm like, I should have got Animal Man.
Yeah. But yeah, there's
I'm getting too much stuff already.
It's a good split story. What's going on between the Red Place and what's going on at Earth, and the struggle that he has to try to conquer between the two worlds, and the things that he turns into and these other creatures. Oh, one of the things I kind of find funny in the very first issue, you remember how his daughter Madison brought back all the dead animals? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that is what she actually did then. We weren't sure. She was just playing with them or animating.
She brought them back. She is a key point to this third comic. I don't want to tell you what it is, but a lot is revealed about her. Basically, what the hell is going on with this world is all because of this little 4-year-old girl. So you got to read this so you can know why. But yeah,
I should have read this.
The thing is with the animals, I just thought this was really cute. It was in a couple panels. The animals that she brought back in the first issue, let's just say they like to tease her brother. And he doesn't appreciate it.
He's a little dick anyway.
But it's funny. He's like, you want to laugh and you're just like, that would be kind of creepy though.
Yeah, but it's like, then you remember, there's a little undead animal skeletons. That's not funny.
No.
The thing is, I'm excited to know why she is the key character in this series. I mean, it's basically her story now. It's Madison's story.
Now she's the daughter, right?
Yeah, she's the 4-year-old daughter.
Yeah, okay.
And I just love her. She just loves her daddy so much. And she takes care of him. And she's like, she just keeps on telling him, everything's going to be okay, you know. And he's just like, wait, no, I'm the adult here. You know, I'm supposed to be taking care of you. And it's really good. I really love this series. I honestly didn't think I'd like this series. But it's probably the best one. Probably my favorite one that has come out of the New 52.
Certainly, it's one of the ones that I've seen getting a lot of the praise, and it just annoys me that I didn't. But I'm getting too much stuff as it is.
There's DC books I get that you should probably drop and get that instead. Honestly,
I know, right?
Books that I'm getting, and I'm not getting that book.
Yeah, well, the thing is, it's very well written. The art is disgustingly gross and amazing at the same time. But wow. You know, I just love it. I look forward to it every month. Ironically, this in Aquaman. Who would have thought?
Justice League, not Justice League. Action Comics is the one that's definitely got my vote for best so far.
Yeah,
but,
and I just barely put that. I put that on my poll list, so I'll be getting that.
Good. That's what I want to hear.
Yeah.
like action. It's like Swamp Thing, and it's like Wonder Woman.
I'm going to be dropping Green Arrow and picking up action.
No, you've got Alan Ascenti coming on to Green Arrow.
I'm going to give it two more. I will give a comic book 5 before I drop it.
The new writer, I think, starts at 7.
Yeah. Well, the thing is...
You need to give it till 7.
The thing is, I don't know why I'm still reading Transformers, but...
Well, you're still reading... Well, it's Transformers. But you're still reading that because of the stuff that's coming up afterwards.
I know. So yes.
Yeah, but we just... A bunch of interviews about that in the last week, too, as well, that are really up in the excitement factor.
But I suggest everyone put Animal Man on their pull list. It's awesome.
Well, I continue to keep abreast of it, but I think I might be waiting for a trade on that one. Yeah, that's actually something else that got announced this week that I didn't mention, is that DC have announced their collection plans for the first story arcs of all the New 52.
Well, how's that going to work out?
Well, there are some of them that aren't out until next November.
Oh.
year away for stories that are half over now. I can understand why I didn't think about it at the time, but 52 books, after all. They do have to space them out. They can't release 52 graphic novels in one month.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that would be
overkill. Animal Man would probably be one of those ones that is great in trade.
And I don't think it needs to be grit and trade. It seems like it reads.
Well, no, I'm just saying. I mean, I would like to see like all their concept art and stuff. I mean, because there's some great, crazy pictures in here. So yeah, go put it on your list now, people. I'm talking to you two as well.
Hey, I just added a book. I don't think I'll be adding anything anytime soon. I got Avengers Academy now. I need to get that book.
Well, I'm not adding anything new at the minute because I finally get through Transformers Exiles, the novel. So now I really have to hit this stack of 21 graphic novels.
Oh, jeez.
My God.
Yeah.
My goodness, boy.
Yeah. Jeez Louise.
I'm in the middle of reading Fantastic Four, World's Greatest Comic Magazine, which is just tremendous. So something.
Who needs food and a social life when you have graphic novels?
Well, that would imply that I was reading them, but I am not. I've been trying to read a real book. That's to say nothing of the 9 paperback novels stacked up beside it as well. Too much reading. Arkham City won't finish itself. Oh my God, the Riddler.
Did you ever finish Arkham City?
Not yet. I keep getting distracted by.
Finished it.
I get distracted by trophies.
You can go back and get the trophies. Finish it, because I want to know what you think about it.
Okay, well, I was playing it today, and it actually froze on me whenever I was punching the Joker in the steel mill, so I took that as the PlayStation's cue to let me know that 5 hours was enough for one day.
Yeah, that's a bit much.
I accomplished nothing. I came in, I was going to go, right, I'm going to find Nora Freeze before dinner, and then that'll do. And I did not find that frozen bitch anywhere, and I went off and I fought Mr. Zaz, and I beat Deadshot, and I fought the Mad Hatter, and all this other crazy...
The Mad Hatter thing, I kind of like that.
Holy crap, yeah, that was crazy. Yeah. All this other crazy crap that I did not set out to do.
Yeah. Well, that's why the game is genius, because it's like, okay, I'm just going to go over there, you know, and stop the Joker. Oh, wait, there's somebody screaming for help. What? I'm Batman. I got to go help them. I'm Batman. You know? The Mad Hatter's doing something. I got to go stop him.
The Mad Hatter just blindsides you, you know?
Yeah.
But no, the urge to just say, I'm Batman, every time you just drop down out of somewhere, punch everybody out, and it's like, I'm Batman.
I know, anytime I make that reference, you have to do that.
One moment, I'm Batman.
I got to go back to it.
I keep saying it over and over as constant as I'm like, so if somebody hits me in the back of the head, I say, what do you think you're doing? I'm Batman! Punch.
Oh, yeah. I got to get back to it. I got to finish it. I'm going to have to 100% that thing. Get all that crap.
Well, I'm never going to 100% it because I'm not bothered about the downloadable challenge maps and all the rest of it. But
I think 100% it, I think like all the side missions.
Get all the side missions.
Yeah,
and
the Riddler trophies, because I did all that crap in the first one, so I'm happy.
But there's so much more. I think I have about... I've just over half of the trophies.
Cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, 440 in total.
That's crazy.
Awesome.
Anyway, Triplet, what do you got for us this week?
I'm going to talk about Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 4.
Yeah.
Wait, I haven't read this, but I'm gonna you know, join you looking at it. How's that?
That works. You need to read it because it was
good. I plan on it. Like I said, I have 4 comics that I picked up this week that I still haven't read, so...
Yeah. And... Well, basically what this is it's just, you know, we're still kind of in the origin story, Miles Morales. We still haven't moved away from that. It picks up right after the last issue where Miles is at his school and he gets the news that Spider-Man's been shot, which kind of, you know, put us kind of where his story's kind of fallen in place with, you know, what happened with Peter Parker. And after he finds this out, he actually sneaks out of his school to go and see what's going on with Spidey. And then he actually gets to be there. When Peter, you know, he dies, he sees it from a distance, but he's actually able to be there in the crowd, which I didn't go back to the issues, so I don't know if they were, you know, forward-thinking and actually penciled him in into the crowd. I mean, did you happen to do that, McFeely?
I didn't go back, but I heard somebody say that they did, and they didn't see him anywhere.
Okay, I was wondering if they did or not, because I would think that, you know, that might have been something that they would have done, you know, like, oh, yeah, we're going to do this with it. Obviously, we need to put him in there. But we found out, like, you know, he was there in the crowd when Peter died, and there's this great little scene where, you know, he walks out of the crowd and he's talking to Gwen Stacy, and she's just so distraught, and he's like, "What was his name?" And, you know, she tells him Peter Parker, And as the story goes on, we get to see how, you know, he's kind of like still there in the background in all these big moments when Spider-Man died, like at the funeral.
Oh, they made me relive the funeral.
Oh, yeah. It was the scene with the little girl too. That was just
the funeral girl. No. Why did they make me through the year? Oh God.
They want you to miss him. That's what it is, I guess. But you get the scene at the funeral. He actually goes to he's outside in the crowd, and again he talks to Gwen Stacy again, and he asks her. He says, "Why did he do it? Why did he become Spider-Man?" And she sort of shoots this kind of go to hell look at him.
Oh, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah, and his friend's like, that was effing chiller. Is what he basically says. And she walks away, but then she walks back. And she talks to him, and she says, because his uncle, the guy who raised him, died, Peter thought he died because even though he had these powers, she basically tells the story and basically, reiterates the words that his uncle told him. And that was, that with great power comes great responsibility. And so our new, not even knowing this is our new Spider-Man, Spider-Man now knows, with great power comes great responsibility, and Miles is already kind of feeling this anyway, because there's a scene where he's like in his school, and he's just kind of like talking about the what ifs. I've got this power. What if I was supposed to have helped him? Maybe if I'd have done something. Maybe he wouldn't be dead now. And his friend's like, well, and maybe you'd be dead too. And so you're kind of getting that kind of Peter Parker mentality now, where he's like, oh. I kind of let this happen because I had this great power, even though he hasn't even heard those words yet, and I didn't do anything. And so he's kind of inspired now, where before he was afraid of doing anything, going out and fighting crime or being Spider-Man and all this, but he's sort of inspired now to do something.
Well, it's like we were worried about his parents.
Yeah.
But we sort of concluded after an issue or two that they were probably safe. Because, it turns out, in this one, that his Uncle Ben is Peter Parker. That is
really
great.
Oh, cool.
His Uncle Ben figure, the death that moves him to this, that teaches him this lesson, is Peter Parker.
And that's amazing. And that's kind of smart.
This is an amazing series.
Yeah, who'd be moaning about the slow movement of the first three issues, this issue covers the scope of across the span of six different comics, So this is definitely where things hit the fast forward button, and to work that in then on top of it as well, to really make it clear that this guy is not just putting on a costume because he got similar powers, like the whole legacy is there.
Yeah.
This is not just he became Spider-Man because he had the same powers,
the character more valid too, because like you could like say, oh yeah, he just got spider powers, Spider-Man's gone, so he just decided to become Spider-Man. Well, now now it's like literally almost like it's passing on to him, because like you said, he touched his life kind of with his death, and he feels kind of bad about it, and now he is going to kind of become Spider-Man because, it's paying it forward without, having to use that phrase, but it's like it's paying it forward for superheroes.
He's honoring the dude, as his friend says.
I really like this series, and I can't wait to go back and read it now, you guys.
That's not even the end of the issue.
Well, I flipped through it, and I'm like, oh, cool. I know what happens.
Is Triplett still there?
I don't know.
Sorry, I muted it. Sorry.
Oh, there we go.
He gets his costume, but it's like a cheesy Halloween costume that his friend gives him. He goes out and I think he stops a villain. He stops.
Well, this is the Ultimate Fallout 4 we saw this in. When he first appeared, this was, he fought the kangaroo.
See, I never read that one, so I didn't see that. So, yeah, he fought the kangaroo.
I really thought that, given the slow pace of the first three issues, that they might take a half issue or something to replay that fight. So I'm very pleased to see, just like there's a general sense of desperately increased forward motion with this issue. Not that I'm saying that it's in response to people's complaints about the slow pace. Like, this is just always the way it was going to go. But it's like, they're definitely going to have to reprint that bit of Ultimate Fallout number 4 whenever they print this in graphic novel format, I think.
You think so?
Okay. I think they would have to put it in as a, I don't know, slip it in, and maybe even just between these pages or something.
It'd be cool, because I didn't get that issue. Like, it sold out, and I never even got a copy of it. But just to see it. But I don't feel like you have to know what happens. You just know that you fought somebody. He's got the costume. He's dealing with the same problems. And then the issue ends. Do we want to – I mean, is it a spoiler, you think? Or should I just leave it?
We just leave it. Let's not spoil it.
Yeah. He meets a character at the end of it who we have seen before, and shit gets real.
Yeah. You can't just put on Spider-Man's costume and start spinning around being the new Spider-Man.
Somebody's going to come calling, and they're going to want to know what the hell you're doing. And someone did.
Who do you think you are?
Who do you think you are? It's good. I am so enjoying this comic. I like Miles. I don't want Miles to ever go away.
Yeah, I like him too.
In very short order, they've made him a totally legitimate character, very well fleshed out, and I think any concern I really had about this has evaporated.
I think they found a way for me personally, I don't know for other people, but for me personally, to make Ultimate Spider-Man mean more. Where I got to a point where it's like, I just don't care what's happening. You know, it's sure, I'll keep buying the book because it's Spider-Man, but you know, really, my Spider-Man stuff is Dan Slott's doing it over here and amazing.
Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man is still better than a lot of other things.
The thing is with this Ultimate Spider-Man, I've got to know more about him in 4 issues than I'd have for some characters it's taken me years to know.
Yeah.
You know? And I honestly have feelings for this character more than I do, again, for characters I've known for years. I think they've done a great job with this comic.
Actually, speaking of Tales of Twitter, Dan Slott tweeted this week as well. So, for the Spider-Man musical, that they should have an African American understudy, and just have it be swap out the words and just have him be Miles Morales.
That'd be cool.
I would totally get behind that. You know, it almost makes you think like that. The Amazing Spider-Man, the film's coming up, should have been Miles, just to justify the complete break and restart. You know, you definitely get into this kid. And you'd want to see him go places. I'd be interested to see a 616 Miles Morales, who's just some other kid. Maybe doesn't even have powers at all, but just to know that he's out there, just that he exists.
That would be awesome. But yeah, it's great. If anybody's not reading it, they totally should. It's there are 2 great Spider-Man books. Can't say the same about Avenging Spider-Man because I didn't get it, but there are at least 2.
Saw
great
some
Spider-Man
very
books.
Good reviews for Avenging Spider-Man.
Did you? Now, who was writing Avenging? I can't remember. I know who's drawing it, but who's writing it?
Yeah, the artist is the big draw, but it's Zeb Wells is writing it. And
oh,
Zeb
cool!
Wells is good.
He did some amazing. Also, so wish I'd picked that up. Damn. Yeah, but I'm done. That's good. You want to up yours?
Well, yeah, I am going to talk this week about Fear Itself, issue 7.2 to be precise. After we discussed in the news last week, because none of us read Fear Itself 7.1 and Bucky's surprising return. I was getting Fear Itself 7.2 anyway, because it's a Thor-centric one, and I read Thor and Journey into Mystery. So, but it turns out that where we thought these would probably be pretty throwaway epilogue issues, after the surprise of last week and the sheer pivotal nature of the story, this one-shot turns out to be absolutely essential reading for anybody reading Thor or Journey into Mystery.
Yeah.
Wish they would have told me that.
I know. you told me this before we started recording. I'm like, okay, this is why I can't make sense of Journey into Mystery. So I can't wait to hear this now.
As I thought the Captain America issue would be the eulogy of Bucky, this actually is the eulogy for Thor. It's set actually within the final pages of issue 7 of Fear Itself, immediately following Thor's death in battle with the serpent. Odin, you know, I've got a lot of criticism for Matt Fraction's Fear Itself and his handling of the world of Thor, even in Mighty Thor, because he just really hasn't lived up to the promise he showed in the Thor one-shots he did a couple of years ago, but I have really enjoyed his handling of Odin. And he really succeeds in making me feel Odin's anguish in this, when the father alone takes the body of his dead son into state to wash his wounds, to prepare him for funeral alone, you know? And it's rough. And I mean, it's partially Odin's fault, but, you know, it's rough. And interestingly as well, even though it didn't appear throughout the entirety of Fear itself, we do see Thor does have the sparkling wound in his gut from with spewing World Tree energy that he took during the pages of Mighty Thor as well. So I think that factors into the story here.
Is that going to be how he comes back, maybe? Is that...
I think it's probably involved in it.
Yeah. Because they never did go back to that, did they? I mean, they just kind of like left that out.
No, it's just dangling there, yeah.
Yeah.
The first major thing that happens is that Odin, in response to his muttering to himself that he cannot do it alone, he summons Gaia, Freya, and Idun. They've decided to start calling Frigga Freya now, so there you go, whatever. I don't have any particular comment on that, but that's something they're doing. Gaia is Thor's biological mother. Freya is Odin's wife, and Idun is the keeper of the golden apples that make the gods immortal. A slightly forced attempt to fit those characters into the triple goddess myth, just the triple goddess concept, mother, maiden, and crone, where crone is supplemented with queen here. But yeah, you know, young, older, and oldest, basically. Yeah, it's a slightly forced attempt. But basically, we already knew from the end of Fear itself that Odin was abdicating. He takes the serpent's body to Asgard, where he will stand over it forever to be his brother's keeper. And he exiles all the Asgardians to Earth, where Gaia, Freya, and Idun are now going to be their queen, the All Mother of Asgard. So that's part one of your new Thor status quo. And then the rest of the issue is set up, is taken up with Thor's funeral and everybody just sort of gathering for it. Particularly, Jane Foster is collected by the Warriors Three just as she's examining a young man who started babbling about how gods are like stories. And they don't really end because they already began. You hear a story, even though the story ends, it doesn't like really, because you know how it starts and you can start it again. And stories outlive us as long as you don't forget. And like, how long ago did you two get high? But they didn't get high. This guy just started babbling, and he is in fact laying the seeds. Because you know, I gotta just blow the whole part of this, because the main talking point is what happens here. Everybody gathers. They set fire to Thor's funeral pyre. All the Asgardians appear, yeah, as Odin sends them out. They set fire to Thor's pyre, and all the sparkling energy of the World Tree comes whooshing out of the flame and surrounds the entire crowd. And from the fire bursts Tanaris, this character we knew was taking over the role as the god of thunder. But he bellows as he emerges, "Rejoice and celebrate once again the birth of Tanaris." And everybody in the crowd bursts into cheers and welcomes him in. And the triple goddesses recognize their son. And all the Avengers recognize Tanaris as their comrade. Except little Loki.
Okay, now makes sense now.
What you were talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
Because they never did it. I mean that.
And then, you know, the last page stinger is that we see Thor floating off somewhere in a white void, and it seems like he may be done, but then his eyes snap open, and we know Thor lives yet. But this... You know, I know I've seen this issue take a lot of slagging online. Like, people have been really down on this. I gotta tell you, I'm really interested now. I mean, if our endless reviews of Journey into Mystery on this show have told you nothing about me, I really like the whole power of words, power of stories theme that series has been turned out at the end of its Spirit Self crossover to have basically been built upon. It's very Sandman. And I like it in my stories about myth and gods. And it's just been entirely absent from Fraction's Thor, completely. And it's its presence in Journey into Mystery that has made me enjoy it so much. But here it is in full force, where the basic idea is that just as Loki was able to rewrite the story of the serpent, because he doesn't have a history, because he's a god. He has but a story. Thor's story has ended, but it still exists. The story starts again, except it's Tanaris. But now, because it's a story, it's always been Tanaris. The telling has changed. It is a story. It's the whole oral tradition of the story handed down, changed with each little version. And now, as far as everyone's concerned, it's always been Tanaris, who was an Avenger, who was the god of thunder, in the way where the world is now. But Loki knows something is not right.
That's what makes sense now.
It makes more sense for this to have been like issue 8. Yeah. I mean, really? let me know that I needed this. I mean, when it went to the point 1 and all that stuff, I was like, I'm done with Fear Itself. Yeah. And now it sounds like the stuff I actually would care about comes out. Words.
I mean, you didn't actually like actively need to read Fear Itself 7.1 in order to read, say, the next issue of Captain America, because it was really like Winter Soldier number 0 was what it was. The next issue of Cap is going to be carrying on with its own story and whatever. But this is the next issue of Thor.
Yeah.
Like, this is utterly pivotal reading, and it has turned me right around. You know, I was contemplating dropping Thor, to be honest, because I didn't buy into the death. I didn't believe it was real. Fraction hasn't been doing a particularly great job. I wasn't interested in this new character, but I'm totally spun around on the whole idea now off the back of this issue, because it's taken a concept that I'm very fond of and has finally put it to use in the main book instead of in the sister title where it's been doing. I mean, I guess I don't suppose I would really want both books to always have that as their driving theme. And I imagine going forward now that Journey into Mystery may ease off on that manner of storytelling a little bit, since it actually was the central theme and the punchline, climax, whatever, of the Fear Itself crossover. But I was all. I mean, I've seen people just moaning about this because they go, oh, retcon, or whatever. And it's like,
It doesn't sound like it's as crappy as Sentry, if that's what they're moaning about, you know? It's like, who was always there? We just forgot about. No, this is like, you know, like you said, it's like a myth being rewritten, and that's neat. I mean,
it's not really, you know, it could be meta, but it's not meta. You know, as Bleeding Cool ran the story with the headline, "The Metatextual Retconning of Fear Itself 7.1. And I guess it's possible to see it that way. You know, certainly we live in a world where DC just did it. And where, you know, it's happened to Spider-Man not too very long ago as well. But it's different. This is about characters. You know, it's not meta. It's like internal to the world. That is how this can be treated. I'm not saying that's how it's always been treated or anything, but it's certainly the way that, you know, it to flow so neatly off the end of Journey into Mystery into this concept as well. You would hope people had been reading Journey into Mystery so that this would come about with more understanding. And you wonder maybe if Fraction developed the idea off of seeing, because I don't really feel like Fraction has looked too closely at Journey into Mystery and seen what it was doing. You know, it's like when he brought Loki back as a child in the first couple of issues of Mighty Thor, I don't think he was thinking about what Kieran Gillen had set up and about freeing Loki from his destiny and everything. I think that may have just been a tremendous coincidence that Gillen was able to mine for some great story material.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, it's worked out beautifully. I really like the concept. And my interests are definitely kicked up for the next couple of issues of Thor. Tanaris seems to be a big boasting ass of a character. So, you know, I mean, his mother actually describes him as what an ass, you know. So whether or not he'll be a decent central character, that remains to be seen. But I can't imagine he's going to be around for anything.
Does he have Mjolnir, or does he have his weapon?
A differently shaped hammer.
Oh, it's a different hammer. Okay, yeah. I wasn't sure how that was going to work.
Well, if you read Journey to Mystery, you could see a little bit of it.
Yeah, I need to finish it. I got halfway through it. And yeah, they didn't. I saw Tanaris in it, and I was like, hey, they never mentioned, you know, who this dude is. And I thought, well, maybe that's what you were talking about, but I wasn't sure.
Not just that, but you'll see that the Vanir, like the All Mother, are in it as well. And
form
a key part of the second half of the issue
I'm
as well.
I'm so glad you talked about this.
Yeah, so now you know. And knowing is half the battle. G.I. Joe.
That's a series I should talk about one of these weeks. what's going on with G.I. Joe, though.
Well, for now, let's move on to the show with yes. Marvel's Special Point One issue.
Special, for sure, because it costs $6.
Sure is special, cost. Yeah, for $6.
you would like to think it was special. To be fair, it's like 50 or 60 pages of story. You're getting what you pay for in sheer by volume. Yeah, at the very least,
sheer volume, at least. I'll agree with you on volume. That.
But...
Can I start off by saying something?
Feel free.
Why did I have to pay $6 for a preview of Marvel's next couple of books?
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Why did I have to pay $6 for a preview of like 4 books and a bunch of stories where they don't tell me where I can follow the threads?
Mm-hmm.
And like a bunch of stuff that, God help me, I don't give a fuck about.
Yeah, I'm not getting it.
I am grateful you guys are the same frame of mind as I am.
Yeah. I mean, wow. I want my $6 back, frankly,
guys. I
got
it too, yeah.
Well, okay. Give me $4 back. I've seen advertisements come out that give me more than what this $6 book is. You know?
I think if it was $3... I might have been okay with it because the stories aren't bad, and then what connects all the stories is what really interests me.
Yeah,
the stories themselves I could do without, but the stuff that connects them is got me thinking. Wow, where's this going?
Well, let's do a rundown of the different stories. Oh. Our branching story is let's just get to the end. They hid the credit. They sort of hid the credits at the end, so you couldn't prejudge them if you didn't know who was writing them. Yeah. That worked for one or two things, and it also vilified me in a few others. So the framing sequence is called Behold the Watcher. It's by Ed Brubaker, with art by Javier Pulido, who we've seen most recently on Daredevil. And it is about two mysterious space-suited types sneaking into the Watcher's lair when he's in a fugue state for 30 minutes and scanning his equipment and records. And it is those scans that they take that are our 6 stories within. Kicking off with a Nova story, entitled Harbinger by Jeff Loeb and Ed McGuinness.
Yeah.
So
I didn't immediately think it was Ed McGuinness when I was looking at the art. I don't know.
Yeah, it's because Nova's so. It's because Nova's so small.
Yeah.
He's not the usual Giganto Ed McGuinness character.
Is he still the same Nova? Is it still, what's his name? Rick?
He looks awfully tiny to be Richard Rider, but...
Yeah.
So I guess this is really the lead story. Not because it's the first story in the book, but because it's the one of two stories where we actually had already received a hint about it.
Mm-hmm.
In which Nova tries to warn Terax to save his home planet from the encroaching Phoenix. And we knew the Phoenix is coming. It's coming, so they've told us. So that's the thing, and he fails. And he fails in the sense that when he flies away from the planet, completely failing, and everybody on it dies, as he cries to himself, he describes his actions as an epic fail. Fucking really, Jeff? An epic fail. Oh, yeah, the mass murder of billions. Yeah, that was an epic fail, yeah. Fuck off. Yeah, so, it's coming, as we had, we'd figured out at this stage that it's coming was the Phoenix anyway, based on the teaser we saw at the Fear Itself #1, but interesting to see that it is the Phoenix out there raging around in space on its own without a human host as of yet, so... I can't say that I'll be hunting down a Nova story or anything, but if this is going to be the central thing for Marvel in a year or so, I've seen worse central hooks. You know, not a great story, but... Yeah. Our second story is... get the title again here. The Myth of Man by David Laffin with art by Roberto De La Torre, which is going to be taking place in Uncanny X-Force as a prelude to an Age of Apocalypse #1, which I don't know if it's going to be a miniseries or an ongoing. I hadn't heard anything about that having been announced, so that's new, you know. I wasn't feeling this one at first. It's set in a post Days of Future Past style world, but it's a world where mutants have actually succeeded in driving out their human oppressors and become just the dominant society in everything. And it's how a father tells his son this story as a bedtime story, just how they got rid of the evil humans. And then his
those
father,
scary humans, yeah.
And then his father is killed by the Red Prophet. And I admit that this did not interest me in the slightest until the last page.
Okay, now, let me go back here.
You'd need to have some knowledge, some X-knowledge, some obscure X-knowledge, to really understand why. But it basically, we meet the X-Terminated, who are they're in this world where mutants rule. They are the lone band of human rebellion against the evil mutant technocracy.
I knew most of these names, but one I didn't know.
Yeah, there's one I don't know as well. So, you know, this team is made up of Graydon Creed, Francesca Trask, William Stryker, Donald Pierce, and Zora Rissman. Now, I don't know Rissman, but all the others are either are or are the children of or relatives of like noted anti-mutant campaigners and fanaticists from the mainstream X-Men comic. And that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, they're the heroes in this story. And that's kind of nuts.
That is strange.
That caught my attention. The rest of the story didn't really do anything for me.
The only thing I want to know about this story is what happened to the dog.
Dog was probably fine.
That is the cutest little face. Oh my gosh.
They just hate mutants, not dogs.
Unless that dog was a mutant, then it's a triple.
Oh, then it died. The third story is The Scarlet Thread by Chris Yost and Ryan Stegman. This one we knew muchly about, which is the story of how Kane, it is Kane, as the Scarlet Spider, sort of trying to fight his destiny as a crime fighter. I don't want to fight crime. I'm not Peter Parker. Right? Oh, but I can't fight. I must help the innocent.
I got excited about this one when I was reading it. Because when it started, I was like, dude, Scarlet Spider is going to be based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. We finally got a superhero. But no, he's just going to Mexico. Damn it.
I presume this is then going to be kind of the Incredible Hulk, Bill Bixby style, walking across America, defending towns as he crosses them.
But wait, who knows? Maybe
that would interest me some.
maybe he doesn't make it out of Charlotte.
Nah, he's walking down Interstate 85. Yeah. Looks like he's leaving Charlotte at the end of the issue.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, much as I like the creators involved and have followed what has led to this story up to now, this could not have done any less for me. It is so bleh. It is so full grim. It's like, oh, I am Kane, I am tortured, I wear a hoodie. It's like, it's absolutely, whenever Spider-Man is so fun and so full of joy as a comic, and so just so full of bright, determined, positive, resolute hero.
Yeah.
What is Kane offering me that I can't get anywhere else? I was a monster. I did bad things.
I don't know anything about the Twilight books, but is this supposed to be like the Twilight Spider-Man? Because I'm kind of getting that vibe off of it.
Oh my goodness! You're comparing Scarlet Spider to Edward.
You said the hoodie thing, you know, and
you're comparing Scarlet Spider to Edward. I'm just making sure of this.
I'm on Team Kane.
I'm on Team Parker.
I think Triple, you've lost it now.
I'm sorry.
Now this is just. So yeah. Bland. I mean, I can tell you this. If there's anything that has happened off the back of this, I'm absolutely convinced to not buy the Scarlet Spider.
We talked about cancellations at the beginning of the episode, or I think in the original part of this episode. I think this might be one of those books that's
I can't see
canceled.
If it's especially if it's going to be so grim and so po-faced. Yeah. So now this is the next one is. Probably the most interesting, I think, to me. And I was pleased then when I got to the end and I saw it had been written by Fred Van Lente.
Yep.
I didn't recognize Salvador Larroca as the artist, but it's called Yin and Yang, and it introduces us to two new characters called Cold Moon and Dragonfire. Now, the comic, perhaps its greatest failing, does not in any way tell us where we can follow these characters or how we can...
Yeah, I know. It's going to. I didn't know if like, If it was Avengers,
all the all of the five things, all the seven things, we are told where we can follow the Scarlet Spider, the Uncanny, the Age of Apocalypse thing, the Defenders and the Avengers stories, which we're going to get to in a minute, and the general It's Coming thing is obviously supposed to be quite vague. So that's five of them. The other two, which are the most interesting ones, the Watcher stuff and the Cold Moon and Dragonfire, we don't know where to go. So that's great. You know, that's your primary fail right there. I mean, obviously, maybe they just don't think it's time to do it or whatever, but I don't know. So this is a story about two twins who were born with fire and ice powers, but have to be kept separated because of the way their powers interact with each other. And they've been what's the name of it? The company, I've already forgotten the name of it.
Tai Chi.
They've been kept separated from them, and now they're free as adults. And it's, you know, hunting down the corporation that has wronged them all their life. And the final two pages see them pop out of nowhere to help the Avengers fight AIM. And they seem like fairly fun characters, and they're easily the most interesting thing to have come out of the entire point one issue.
Yeah, that made me think that maybe they're going to be in maybe one of the Avengers books when they showed up to help the Avengers. I don't know.
Maybe. But it's like Fred Lanty wrote it, so I don't know, you know. And then I think the strange thing, you know, is like, not that I'm down on the concept, but I am looking at them and I'm wondering if these guys are so important that they deserve a place in this point one book, which is supposed to be about the big stuff for the next year of Marvel. Who, what, where, why, when, and how?
Yeah.
The why, primarily, because these do not look like to be the stars of the next big crossover, you know? I mean, the Phoenix thing is the next big thing. Kane is spinning out of the last big Spider-Man event. The X-Men ain't got nothing going on, so they gotta get squeezed in here somehow. Plus, there's gonna be this Age of Apocalypse series, so that's happening. The Defenders is the next one. It's actually a Doctor Strange short by Matt Fraction and Terry Dodson, the creative team of the upcoming Defenders comic. So that's a new series. We'll pause there and talk about that one. This one was okay.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. I kind of liked it, but it still hasn't won me over to get me to buy Defenders.
Yeah. Not for $4 an issue, frankly.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah. Doctor Strange sort of frees the mind of the of Greenwich Village's one of their celebrated crazy homeless, and is offered a glimpse into the near future where the Defenders is happening.
Joe, that was his name. Notebooks Joe.
That's kind of cool. Yeah. and then that's about it. And then our last one is the one I was actually most looking forward to, and in turn then the one I really felt most let down by, which is Bendis and Brian Hitch on The Age of Ultron, which is our next little foreshadowy bit for the Ultron War, which we've seen hinted at in a couple of issues of Avengers since it started back up after Siege. And we see a glimpse of a New York in the future where Ultrons have dominated the city and the Avengers are still holed up in the... that's not the mansion, is it? No, it just seems to be a tenement building.
It's like an apartment or something. It's very Days of Future Past-y.
Yeah.
I like this two-page spread right here. This is what I liked. I thought it was kind of makes you feel like you're dazed and confused yourself.
I like the art.
The shaky cam panel, yeah. Well, you can't go wrong with Brian Hitch. Yeah. It's like, this is Bendis and Brian Hitch. I should be getting excited about this, and I'm quite interested to see the Ultron War. But this is 8 pages of shaky cam as the Avengers run from Ultron, and nothing else.
This does not
in any way set us up for anything we didn't already know was coming out of the Ultron War. It is a waste of time.
Just about.
And then we return to our mystery figures. And we know that these guys are... We find out that these mystery figures are called the Unseen. And they are here to try and kill the Watcher. They will be coming back to try and kill the Watcher.
I'm really interested in that story. And I wish they would kind of find out about it.
The two promising things from interesting new characters and the most interesting story hook are the two things which we know nothing about or where to follow the story to next. Nice job, Marvel.
Yeah. And you charge us $6 for this.
Yeah. There is some great creative teams at work on this book, but... I mean, I'm not saying like they don't manage to tell decent, like, complete point one, point half, zero issue type stories in the in the comic, you know, each one gives me a fair decent idea of what to expect from everything, basically. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, yeah, they certainly succeed in that regard, except maybe the Nova one. I really don't know what's going on there, because I don't know if it's supposed to be a Nova thing or if it's just
I kind of got the feeling that it's not necessarily Nova, but it's just, hey, this is so big that, hey, it's happening to on the outskirts of the
universe. It's happening in space.
Yeah, so Nova's a space superhero. Yeah, in space.
Because it's not Loeb and McGinnis are busy with the X sanction thing with Cable now for the next 6 months. That'll invariably be quite late. So I don't see them doing a Nova series or anything. Not that I would buy it anyway, frankly. I'm buying anything by Loeb. But, yeah, you know, if there's one thing in the, you know, you want to talk about epic fails, this would be one.
Yeah, I really think
there is nothing.
They called it in the issue, epic fail. I mean, we agree with them.
Very, very little to recommend this as a one shot.
I just think that, like, with the Doctor Strange story, I'm like, that to me was really boring. And I'm like, I hope the movie that they're talking about is a lot better than what we just saw.
Well, yeah, it'll probably involve Doctor Strange doing some actual magic in it for more than two pages.
Yeah.
Mincing around the street and thought, oh, the local crazies, oh, I love Greenwich Village. Oh, Greenwich Village. This is where the quirky people, they gather up here. By the way, magic. And
So Marvel doesn't believe enough in, I guess, Doctor Strange to give him his own book, but they believe enough in him to take him off of the Avengers, put him on the Defenders, and give you these kind of book to do it.
I don't mind him coming off of the Avengers, and it's been a long time since Doctor Strange was able to sustain a series. Not that I wouldn't give it a go if they put a good creative team on it. I would buy a Doctor Strange series. It's like Doctor Strange has been floating on the fringes, rebuilding his profile just long enough now that I think it's a pretty good time to try it. You know,
I think it's a good time.
Part of the
reason why I think it's a good time is, think of this. Okay. Dan Slott's been doing Amazing Spider-Man for a really long time, and God forbid he ever stopped doing Amazing Spider-Man. I'm not suggesting this, but if he did, I would read the shit out of a Doctor Strange series written by Dan Slott. I'm just telling you that right now.
I can't argue with that. but if and when Defenders meets its end, that's Doc Strange's chance lost.
Yeah.
You know, this is essentially, you know, it's this or nothing. You know, we're not going to get a Doctor Strange series. If this tanks, we're not going to get another. He's not going to get another go around solo. You know.
Yeah, and I think it's going to tank. It's got.
Well, I don't want to tank, but
yeah. I don't want it to tank. I mean, it's got good writer, good artist, and
well, Fraction is toting a lot of baggage around at the minute. He has got the weight of Fear itself against him now, and the weight of a rather poor start to his Thor. Well, a poor first year on his Thor toting around behind him as well. He's going to have to try and work his profile back up, and $4 as well.
Yeah.
I think that's what ticks me off about this, is the price of it.
And the price is, I'm not going to rag on the price, honestly. It's a lot of pages. Just unfortunate that it's just not very good. And it's just not, you know. I don't think that there's really anything that happens in here that is pivotal reading for the future at all.
No.
We learn nothing more about the Ultron War. There's no more about that future sketched out or laid in that we'll need to know going forward. Doesn't really seem I guess we don't know about the Defenders. Some of the stuff that happens there does seem like it might be building towards that. I grant you, maybe the Scarlet Spider story sets up the series, I don't think anybody really believes that has a life in it. Conceptually, so you know, that just seems like it's setting up a 6-issue miniseries. Don't even know what the story with the Age of Apocalypse one was. You know, I gotta admit, like, the Age of Apocalypse one, I won't be buying it because Age of Apocalypse, no, ta, thanks. But conceptually, it caught my eye when it got to the last page. After finding the opening thing a bit, I'm not so interested in this so witty flip on the dystopian future. But the idea that they're taking, like, the fascists and making them the heroes, you know, that catches my eye. And Cold Moon and Dragonfire seem like pretty cool characters who could, you know, they could do something with them if I knew where to go to follow them next. Van Lente doesn't have a regular book, so I don't know where to expect to see them.
It's just so weird. I mean, every story should have ended and find out more in the pages of blah, blah, blah. Yeah. I mean, why? It takes like a second to do that. You know, just
well, they've got on there. They've got the cute little graphic at the end of each story. You're supposed to figure it out by that.
Well, I don't know. I think that was maybe a conscious decision not to do that, to try and make this feel less like a book of trailers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember Marvel did one of these for Dark Reign, and they did one for the Heroic Age as well. And those really were just books of trailers. You know, they were better than this, and they were smaller and cheaper, too. But, yeah, no, just like as an experiment, no. Just no. It has no.
Yeah.
For all the hype,
I hope they don't do this again.
The single most telling thing was there was a lot of trumpeting about the hashtag Marvel.1, and if you clicked that hashtag, nobody was talking about the book. Everybody was just going, "I'm reading it. Yeah, I'm totally gonna get it. Just bought." Nobody was saying, "Wasn't it brilliant?" or whatever. No, nobody was actually saying anything about the book because
so
they'd read.
If I tweet like Marvel.1 and say like, yeah, we talked about it and it's not that good, I wonder if that will pop up, be the only thing that pops up for the hashtag.
I hashtagged it whenever I tweeted the show at the start, so we'll see.
Awesome.
Well, I guess that's it for the show this week. Yeah. Nice to review something that's dump for a change.
We had one a few weeks back, but it's been a while.
Yeah, it wasn't funny dump.
Yeah.
It was just dump.
There was no Michael Knight in it. That's why it failed.
Knight Rider,
in
exactly.
In the dystopian future of Uncle Kane riding around the country in kit. I don't think he wants to do that, Kane. And he's his stoic foible. Anyway, I think that'll do it for this week, folks. As ever, you can follow us on Twitter at FanboyVersus as part of the TF Radio Network, and you can follow us individually on Twitter. I'm at Chris McFaley. Nicole, you are?
I'm at Beatles Diva. Beatles as in the band, not the bug.
And Triplett, you are?
At Man of the Town.
So follow us, follow the show, and we'll see you back here next week. JD will be back to host again and probably provide us with a stable internet connection so we can actually come
out.
We
might have all four of us on again.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I'm gonna,
my God.
It's your turn to duck out deliberately.
I'll work on that.
Excuse me. All right, we'll see you next week, folks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, I didn't end that right at all. It was supposed to be join us again next week. Oh, well, I'm just going to re-record that. So join us again next week when it'll be Fanboy versus... Now we can splice that in.
Yeah, I can place it in. I'll do the editing and I'll set it off.
Okay, I've got this... where's my thing? I've got it backed up if there's anything wrong with your end as well. Just the second half. Stop the recording. I want to get it.
I got the full thing recorded.
Cue. Yeah, that wasn't too bad. We didn't even run that late either, even with the delays.
Yeah? Thought we did pretty good.
Well, one less person.
Yeah. But we did talk a lot about Green Lantern.
Well, justifiably so. We needed to talk something about it.
I'm excited for it.
Are we able to use any of that since that's where it was the breaking point? I mean, how does that work?
No.
Do we have that recorded?
I had it recorded because he'll be asking me to back up anyway. So.
How fortunate was that?
Huh?
We wouldn't normally have done that either, so how fortunate was that?
Well, the thing is, I have my Skype recorder. It automatically records all the Skype calls. And then once a week, I go in and I dump the files. Because I like to blackmail people.
I see the things you post on Twitter.
It's not me. It's mostly...
entirely it is, isn't it?
Because I get my foot caught in my mouth a lot, you know? It's like, wait, I didn't mean to say that. It's just how it came
out. He's just got a filthy mind.
Oh, funny, funny. So I take it you're not doing a spotlight.
No, funnily enough, I'm not doing it with myself, no.
So, Chris, what's on the spotlight this week? Well, I'm glad you asked.
Well, Chris, I'm glad you asked.
That'd be funny. You should have like two separate cameras, and then you could look into one.
You're just cutting back and forth.
That would be awesome. And then you could. could like ask yourself some questions. Oh, that'd be funny.
Awesome. Well, I'm gonna jump off, guys.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
I must not play any more Arkham Asylum tonight. Too much today. Too much today.
I heard it's a good game. That's the reason why I gave up video games. I got rid of my consoles because I spend way too much time playing them.
The DS, I've probably said it before, the DS ruined me for video gaming because I was doing all of it on the DS, playing all Phoenix Wright and all the various DS titles. Mm. I think A War for Cybertron, I probably have to... I didn't play Arkham Asylum until months after my brother had finished it already. You know, I think War for Cybertron got me to actually sit down in front of the PS3 again. So I'm doing it a bit more now. And look, I want to get Sonic Generations as well. The only reason I haven't bought it yet is because of Arkham City.
Yeah.
It'll be handy, though, because it'll be cheaper then by the time I'm finished with Arkham City.
Sweet. Well, I'm going to go, guys. All
right.
See
I'll talk to you guys next
week. Okay, guys. See you
have
next
a good
week.
One. Okay, bye-bye.
All right. So join us again next week when it'll be Fanboy versus...
This has been Fanboy versus... Visit us at tfradio.net for show notes and to subscribe to the podcast. Follow us on Twitter at tfradio for news and updates. Like the podcast? Leave us feedback on iTunes. Copyright 2011, Radio Free Cybertron.